I think we're ready to begin the meeting. Okay. I want to welcome everyone to tonight's TAC meeting. We'll start off with a roll call. Rob Miller.
Present.
John Brady. He's excused absence. We know where he is. John Fouché.
Here.
Bob Simonson.
Here.
Russ Westerman.
Here.
Dan Berman.
Present.
Maria Kelly.
Here.
Marshall Hilsky will be late this evening, but he will arrive. George Call.
Here.
Jim Furman.
Present.
Rob Scheib.
Here.
Karen Vendetti.
Here.
Okay, we have a quorum. The minutes of last week's meeting are unavailable yet. With the time crunch that we have between meetings now, we may be running a little late, but we will have those for next week's meeting. So we're item one on the agenda, approval of minutes from previous meeting, is going to be postponed until our next meeting. I'd like to start off tonight's meeting. Tonight we're focused on the TAC discussion on the pros and cons of the treatment technology alternatives for the Los Osos Wastewater Project as they've been presented to us by the county project team in their viable projects alternative fine screening analysis. As you are aware, we are now televising our meetings live on Channel 20, and I would like to thank the county for making that possible. It's our hope that by listening in on our deliberations of the pros and cons of the component alternatives, the community will gain a better understanding of the potential solutions to the Los Osos wastewater problem. I would also like to announce that you may follow the progress of our pro-con analysis by visiting our website, which is HTTP for our meetings, in order to engage the community. And we will now take public comment and questions after the three committees have presented their draft of the pros and cons and before the TAC begins its discussion. Only comments and questions pertaining to the alternative treatment technologies will be allowed at that time. If you have other comments or questions relating to the TAC and its role, there is a second public input period on the agenda. Questions to the project team will be answered as time permits at the end of the meeting. And please be sure to fill out your public input slips and hand them to Diane at the end of the table there. And the input slips are on that table back behind the audience. Important, remember tomorrow, beginning at 6 p.m., the project team we'll be hosting a town hall meeting at the Los Osos Middle School where they will present the fine screening analysis to the community. I suggest that questions to the project team be held until that meeting. I think that's a very important meeting, and it will give everyone a real strong input as to what is going on and where we are going with the wastewater project. And finally, our next TAC meeting will be 1 week from tomorrow, in other words, next Tuesday, June 26. And that topic will be alternate collection systems. And that meeting will also start at 7 p.m. With that, we're going to go right into our pro-con, but we're going to start it out before we have the committee reports. Rob Miller is going to go through four of the treatment alternatives so that everyone has kind of an understanding of how they operate, and we'll be showing them up on the screen there for you. So these are what are called the apparent low-cost treatment technology alternatives from the fine screening report. And we'll go to the first one, and then, Rob, you can take it from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would certainly love to take half an hour to an hour to describe all these, but since we don't have that tonight, maybe we'll do that another time. I'm just going to give some of the sort of executive summary level points on these different technologies. It's sort of hard for me to read that text, but it looks like a BioLac option up there from the picture. Two of the options, and we'll cover four tonight, two of the options are very similar in terms of the treatment process. And this first one that we're looking at, it's called BioLac. It's actually a proprietary process, meaning it was invented by a company that specializes in wastewater technology. But what we need to emphasize is that the basic process is the same as many other wastewater, the bacteria that are the basis of this technology. And therefore, you only need a small footprint to fit in the plant. A couple of other important considerations. It does produce sludge, as all treatment processes do produce some sludge. It requires a continuous management of sludge, and it utilizes what's called the extended aeration process, which is a very common treatment process. It's been around for about 100 years. You can remove nitrogen in a BioLac system without any significant additional facilities. Just by implementing some control systems, you can remove nitrogen. It is fairly energy intense relative to some other technologies, though I'd say it's modest when you compare it to the higher end, which would be the membrane bioreactor, and the low end, which would be PONS. So modest energy use. And that's sort of a summary of the BioLac system. It is the least expensive sort of conventional process that the project team looked at. And it's about 25% less than oxidation ditches, which is the next process that we'll talk about. Why don't we go ahead and advance the slide? Okay. One thing that I forgot to mention about BioLac is you can construct a BioLac system in a lined pond. It's pond-like in terms of its construction methods because you dig a hole, you put in a synthetic liner, and then you can equip that pond with a BioLac equipment to produce the effluent that it produces. Contrast that with an oxidation ditch, which is a little higher end. It uses almost the same biological process as ponds, BioLac. An oxidation ditch is usually constructed out of reinforced concrete, so there is significantly more capital cost, again, about 25% more than BioLac, and it utilizes a very, very similar biology. The waste spends 1 to 2 days in the plant. You can remove nitrogen down to low levels, and it produces a nice effluent. It also requires the continuous management of sludge. Next slide, please. Okay, this is the project team's version of a partially mixed facultative pond. There are many different types of partially mixed facultative ponds, and one of the things that I noted in the report is the project team acknowledged that this is not the only pond in town. There are other similar technologies that actually may be less expensive. Nelson Environmental uses ADS equipment. There are other pond processes out there that may result in some value engineering savings over this option that was put forward by the project team. But this certainly is a very conventional facultative pond. And in contrast to BioLac and an oxidation ditch, the waste will spend, instead of 1 or 2 days in the pond process, 10 to 20 days. 20 days being perhaps the preferable. And as a result, you do need more footprint. So instead of 6 to 8 acres, now you're up in the 15-acre range. In terms of energy use, it is a very low energy use, particularly for options that do not require the removal of nitrogen. If you only are looking to get to tertiary water but without removing nitrogen, then you are very efficient in terms of energy use. It's also the lowest capital cost option that was put forward by the project team. Again, if you don't need to remove nitrogen to low levels. One of the controversies over the years that I'm sure many of you know is that, yes, we like pond systems, but can they get down to low levels of nitrogen? Carollo, being one of the probably the largest wastewater design engineer on the West Coast, has looked at this carefully. They've concluded that, yes, a pond system can remove nitrogen. Their suggestion is to do that by adding a trickling filter for that portion of the flow that you need to remove nitrogen. That's for a process called nitrification that we won't get into tonight, although we'd love to talk about that. And then adding a source of carbon for denitrification. And so there's some additional project costs that would need to be added onto a pond system in order to remove low levels of nitrogen. But note that that wouldn't necessarily have to be for all the flow that goes through the plant. It would only have to be for that portion that's reintroduced into the ground as percolation. So the project team has given us a reachable option. They have acknowledged that there are other types of pond systems out there, Nelson being one that may be applicable to Los Osos, and they've done a good job outlining the range of costs for the range of treatment processes. The final process, and the next slide, please. Oh, we don't have a Tri-W slide. Okay. Well, I'll speak from memory on this. The final slide would have been a membrane bioreactor, but you'll get the verbal version here. And that is basically very similar to the first two options, BioLac and oxidation ditch in terms of biology. The waste will spend, again, a very short amount of time in the plant, maybe 24, 36 hours, and then it does require continuous sludge management. The big difference between a membrane bioreactor and either an oxidation ditch or BioLac is the way that the solids are separated from the liquids at the very end of the process. In BioLac or an oxidation ditch, you have a clarifier, which is a circular vessel where the water is left to be very still, and then the solids settle out, and they're recycled back in the process. In a membrane bioreactor, the vessel is completely mixed, and there is no clarifier or place for the waste to be still. Instead, you have these, they're similar to a bunch of straws, slurping up the waste through a very fine membrane, and that fine membrane is what provides the barrier between the solids and the liquids. So what comes out is a very highly purified liquid stream that looks, similar to drinking water. And so it does require a lot more energy in order to do that, and that's primarily to provide the continual force necessary to push that water through that membrane and also to keep the membranes clean, which requires air and chemicals and other things. So it is...
And Water Resources Subcommittee. And Russell Westerman, you're going to give that report?
John Fouché was elected to make that delivery today. Yeah.
It's my turn. And actually, I'm glad we're following Rob because he was very clear in his summation of the different treatment processes, which basically is what we're looking at tonight. The pros and cons analysis of those. So, following up on what Rob has said, I'll try not to repeat anything that he said and just add to that. The first criteria that we looked at was the flexibility of a treatment process to meet future needs and regulations. And we just looked at the four systems that the fine screening report recommended, actually three that they recommended to look at, and then we had to try W for with as much information as we had. So the first one was BioLac, and we separated out the two treatment systems, either using a step collection system or a gravity collection system, because there are a few differences, but not many. For BioLac using step, we know it's proven to reduce the BOD. The footprint's relatively small, it's 8 acres. Versus the gravity system for BioLac is 10 acres. For step, the con is that you have to add the additional treatment to get that nitrogen level down. If you don't add that, you have 37 milligrams per liter. If you use gravity, the footprint I said was 10 acres. And then both systems, they're flexible enough that you can add additional treatment later on, tertiary treatment if that's going to be part of the project now, and additional treatment systems after that if we need to actually go to some kind of a membrane treatment like RO. For the oxidation ditch for STEP, it again has proven to reduce the BOD to a level that's acceptable. And it has a relative small footprint at 8 acres, and it too can add additional treatment train after the process for tertiary or membrane treatment. And those are all good pros for these types of systems because you want to be able to do that. That's the flexibility part. All these systems are flexible. I can say the same thing just across the board. They're flexible enough where you can add additional treatment trains after that to get the tertiary treatment as needed or additional membrane treatment if we need to go to that level. For the STEP system, both for STEP and gravity for the oxidation ditch require 8 acres. So the footprint's about the same. But if you have STEP, again, you have to have additional treatment to bring that nitrogen level down to below 10. Right now it's at 39 milligrams per liter. For the pond system, for the STEP pond, the nitrogen level is again a con at 54 milligrams per liter without additional treatment, which adds cost to that. But it is proven to reduce the BOD to where it's acceptable. And again, it is flexible enough where you can add additional treatment systems after that. For the gravity system, the nitrogen level is around 15 milligrams per liter for the pond system, so it's a little less, but you still have to do additional treatment. And the pond system both require about 20 acres, either using STEP or gravity collection. The next criteria that it's the sludge, basically the biosolids are retained into your septic tank, so there's a reduced volume of sludge. And then for the gravity system, there's for biolac gravity, it's, the con would be how often you have to remove the sludge. The oxidation ditch is basically the same thing. If you're using gravity, you have sludge removal more often than you do with the STEP, but the STEP, again, is the sludge removal from your septic tanks. For the ponding system, the sludge actually stays in the ponds, as Rob had mentioned earlier, for up to 15 to 20 years as it degrades and decomposes into the pond. So a pro to the ponding system is you don't have to handle sludge except for once every 15 or 20 years. Going on to the next criteria that we had was construction costs, replacement, operation, and maintenance. And we used the highest number in table 4.19. Basically, we got this information from the fine screening report, of course. And I'll just give you the construction costs and the operation and maintenance costs as numbers, and then that way you'll just hear them and know them. The BioLac for STEP, the construction cost was $20.8 million, and the operation with the STEP system is $900,000 a year. Now, we used those high numbers, but we also used the numbers that included denitrification and nitrification, so it was the highest cost the system would be. The BioLac gravity is $19.9 million with an O&M of $800,000 a year. The oxidation ditch was $23.1 million with $920,000 a year operation and maintenance costs, and that was the STEP system. For the oxidation ditch gravity, the construction cost was $22.6 million with the O&M of $790,000 a year. For the ponds, the STEP system was $20.7 million, and that was with the STEP system with an O&M of $890,000 per year. And for the gravity system for ponds, the construction cost was $25.6 million with $900,000 O&M cost per year. And the MBR for the Tri-W site was the number that we pulled out of the table was $55 million a year, so that was a con because it's twice as much, if not more, than any of the other systems. The other thing with Tri-W, the con was the frequency of sludge removal, as Rob had mentioned, as it's handled a little bit more often. But it does deliver a high-quality effluent, and the site itself, of course, is the acreage is 11 acres, and so it is somewhat constrained. The next criteria was energy, and I'll just give you annual costs of what these different systems are based on either being step or gravity. For BioLAC step, the annual cost for energy was $100,000 a year. For BioLAC gravity, it was $130,000. Oxidation ditch step was $100,000. Oxidation ditch gravity was $110,000. The ponds for step was $70,000 for either step or gravity.
Just a short while ago. Congratulations.
That's my excuse for not being here last week. Thanks, Bill. We've got, let's see here. This is going to be easier. I tear this off. Maybe not. So this is the, I'm presenting the draft pro-con analysis that the Environmental Working Group has done on Chapter 4, the treatment technology. I'm going to list just briefly the criteria that we were using here. Construction impacts, community impact, biological resources, archaeological resources, and energy use. Those are the five criteria that we had determined in advance before seeing this fine screening report. In the end, there's really there was really two issues that determined most of our comments here. One is about the size of the footprint. The more footprint, the larger the space that's needed for the plant, we assume the larger the impact on both biological resources and archaeological resources. And then the energy use, I guess I shouldn't have said two, a few more than two. Energy use is summarized in a table, but and I think the Engineering and Water Resources Group just ran through that, at least translated into cost. The challenge for us that we found, and I think we're going to have to come back to this as we get farther through this report, was that some of the technologies, the energy use was presented to operate the plant for a year, but then they produce different amounts of sludge. Those take energy, different amounts of denitrification processes that take additional energy. And so I think what we're going to be doing is as we get farther down the road, that table's useful for what it says, and I think it was presented pretty clearly. As we get farther down the road, we're going to need to look at the energy use of the packages as a whole. If you put together the whole process, how much energy does it use? We also actually went back, in terms of community impact, we went back to the rough screening report, which talked a little bit about the level of odor treatment that was feasible for different kinds of technologies. And that, again, had to do with the footprint. And I'll run through that. Why don't I run through the footprint and its impacts, both on the biological and archaeological resources and also on the odor control. So the BioLAC system, both with gravity and with step. With a gravity system, see, am I getting this right? Yeah, with gravity, it was one of the largest footprints needed, 10 acres, the largest outside of the ponding system. So that's a negative in terms of a variety of things. And then that size also makes it much more difficult to do odor control. You can't really enclose it very well. The gravity... So the size impacts the biological resources, the archaeological resources, the construction impacts, and we just sort of peg that to the footprint. The more area you're disturbing, the more earth moving, the more heavy equipment work. The BioLAC with the step system is a little bit smaller in terms of the footprint. It goes from 10 to 8 acres, so that's a small improvement. But again, the size makes it difficult to control the odors. We actually went through all of the technologies that were fleshed out in the fine screening report, so it's a little longer than what we just heard. For the extended aeration, it has a pretty small footprint, and that also makes the odor control more feasible. For the SBR system, that also, similarly, a 6-acre footprint, a little less impact on the resources on the ground, and it also makes odor control a little more feasible. Similarly, with trickling filters, the partially facultative ponds, because they have a noise it generates for the surrounding community. And then we wanted to analyze the membrane bioreactor system sort of as a standalone. There wasn't information about it in this chapter. There was some in the fine screening in the end of the fine screening report, and some in the rough screening report. The basic issues in terms of our things were the community impact and construction impacts were magnified by the location, although that's kind of separate from the technology. So in terms of the technology alone, we don't have O&M costs. We've heard that it uses quite a bit more energy. We'd like to get Corolla to look into that, because we've also heard that those costs may have come down to some extent. It was designed, and it's because it's so small, it can be an enclosed facility, so you have more control over odors and more control over noise as the technology alone. And then, as I said, that the energy use is sort of, we want to wait and do that across the whole board once we can see how all the different pieces fit together. And I think that wraps it up. I guess I'll just summarize by saying it was our analysis for the technology was largely about the footprint and then the effects of that on the biological and archaeological resources, on the ability to control odors, on the impact during construction, all of which are basically tied to how much space you need to be disturbing. And then we are very interested in the energy use, but we felt like it might be misleading to look at it just in this component alone. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dan. And now we'll go to the final report from the Financials Subcommittee, and that will be given by Karen.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask you to go to the end of our report where you see a table. We're going to start at the back end and move to the pros and cons from there. This chapter was so much about numbers, and boy, I'll tell you, we really did scramble our brains trying to sort through it and find a way to present the numbers to ourselves as well as to the Board of Supervisors and the public that made some sense. We will make these available to you. On this table, what we've done is that we've looked at four treatments. We kind of followed engineering's pathway of looking at oxidation ditches, BioLac, facultative ponds, and MBR. Those are the four treatments that we analyzed so far. We took a look at construction, and we separated out nitrification and denitrification so that we could see the cost impact, and we separated out tertiary treatment likewise. And we give a total cost column for each of those four, and separating all of those into gravity and step so that we can see very clearly side by side the four main treatments that we're looking at and how they relate to the costs impact with gravity as opposed to step, because sometimes there's some dramatic differences. We also took a look at the acreage required, concerned about the footprint. That's a financial concern as well. And we have another table. We have a big hole in our information, of course, because we don't have the numbers on the energy requirements, particularly for Tri-WMBR. Now, I'm going to go at the bottom of the page on our assumptions, because our numbers came from many of the tables within Chapter 4, not just this table or that table. We assumed, for instance, that denitrification would only be needed for Brodersen, we would probably throw in urban reuse in that thing. If we had to bring a pipeline back into town, you might as well put all the same kind of water in it. And we know that needs to be denitrified to be usable on Brodersen. So when you take a look in the earlier chapters about disposal and reuse, and you look at the amount of offset or how that water is going to be reused, how many acre feet is needed for each disposal reuse option, you add up Brodersen and urban reuse, and it comes out to a little less than 50% of the total. The others are the cemetery, ag in lieu and ag exchange, spray field. I mean, there are those other things going on. But what we know we're going to have to denitrify if we do use Brodersen is we assume 50%. So if you'll see the footnote number one, nitrification, denitrification, we have taken the numbers that relate to point 8 as opposed to point 4 and as opposed to 1.2 or 1.4. And I'm also going to throw in the seasonal aspect on this. We chose point 8 instead of point 4 for denitrification because of the seasonal nature that sometimes Brodersen and urban reuse is going to require more of it than less. So we built in the number for the highest amount when Brodersen will be taking the most. Another assumption that's important is nitrification. The requirement to nitrification, which converts the ammonia, and we know that STEP has a lot of that. Nitrification may not be required for ag use from what we've been reading in the fine screen. So, again, we may save ourselves some costs by not having to nitrify as well as denitrify the whole shebang. Footnote number 3, we assume the full flow of the fine screen in the numbers assumed the full flow of 1.4 in many of their numbers as it relates to treating to tertiary for ag use, urban reuse, and future regulations. 1.2 is the number they're using for STEP in other places, but when they actually used the numbers, they used 1.4 as a basis. The fourth footnote, ponds may only be doable on the Jacomazzi site, from what we can see out of the primary or preferred sites so far. And number 5, O&M costs. We assumed that we would have a 0.4 million gallon per day denitrification side stream flow as it relates, let's see, where is number 5? Under nitrification, denitrification. Did we, on O&M? On O&M.
Because during the summers we don't pump.
Right, because in the summers we're not pumping there. So with that, we'll go back to the pros and cons. If you'll flip back a couple pages. We set them on the STEP collection system, only about $570,000 per year. Across the board on that, it has high O&M costs for gravity collection, $690,000. So it really depends on the collection system there. Continuing on O&M, denitrification of flows for Brodersen discharge are included in our numbers. Moderate energy use with the STEP collection system, it's 800,000 kilowatt hours per year. And I'm going to contrast that across the board. The con is that it's a moderate to high energy usage. This is the verbiage in the fine screen. With a gravity collection system, it's 900,000 kilowatt hours per year. Another pro is that for oxidation ditch, it has less solids residence time, and it also has less volume of water in the aeration basins. And I was not clear, Rob, on if that may have implications in how much water is required to make the process happen. No? Okay. And we don't know about the risks. There was no discussion about risks of leakage or failure, I don't think, in any of them. So I'll just kind of skip over that. BioLac, you can see in the pros, it requires 8 to 10 acres, has low to moderate cost for plant construction. And by the way, these represent the upper end of the baseline value, according to the fine screen, because they didn't have a whole lot of information on it. But even though the numbers in the fine screen represent the upper end of BioLac costs, they still show a 20% savings. Another pro, denitrification of flows from Brodersen is included. Lowest BOD, biological oxygen, biochemical oxygen demand. Thank you. Took me a little homework to figure that one out. Has the lowest BOD content in the effluent. It's only 1 with gravity, 3 with STEP. Is that right? Anyway, and we may be able to expand or upgrade by simply adding aeration basins. The con on BioLac is that tertiary treatment is required. O&M, it has a low O&M with STEP, but a high O&M with gravity. And again, denitrification is included in the cost. And it has a moderate energy usage with STEP of 800,000. It has a moderate to high energy usage with gravity of 1,100,000 kilowatt hours per year. tertiary treatment is required, and it has a longer solids residence time. Partially mixed ponds, low cost for plant construction, $13.1 to $14.2 million. But the cons, it requires 16 to 20 acre site, probably may require nitrification. It requires denitrification for those flows going to Broderson. It has a high BOD content, and tertiary treatment is required for ag or urban reuse. On O&M, ponds shines here. They've got low O&M with gravity or step. It's only $510,000 per year. They have very low energy usage with gravity or step, 600,000 kilowatt hours per year. And if you recall just a moment ago, on BioLagify should be ascertained during value engineering. This could substantially reduce the costs associated with nitrification. Finally, Tri-W, my MBR treatment system. On the pros, it requires a smaller site, and I think we've got the wrong number. We thought it was 4, but I think you had it right. It is 8. The engineering folks said 8, because there's a piece that's like under the ground. Tertiary treatment is included, which meets Title 22 for agriculture and urban reuse, and denitrification is already included in it too. However, in the cons, it has a high construction cost. They're using the $55 million, and we all know that that was pretty inflated under the circumstances, but it still is a very high cost. I've read numbers from, well, I don't even guess at that, but it's a high cost of construction no matter what. And we know that there's going to be heavy vehicular traffic in the center of town, and we'll probably have to purchase additional land if we want future upgrades or expansion. On O&M for the MBR treatment, tertiary treatment is included. So that's a plus. On the con side, it has a very high O&M with a gravity collection system of $700,000 per year. And the costs with STEP, of course, are not happening. And again, we just need to emphasize if the county could please get us some energy requirements for the MBR process project. That's it.
Thank you very much, Karen. And I think all those reports are fine. I just want to remind everyone again on the process. As a result of these reports going to all the TAC members, and then the discussions that we have the rest of the evening, we'll take all that back and then we will put that together and update the working draft, which, as I said earlier, is on our website. And that document is a living document, so often things may change as we go through, and I will try, or we will try to make sure you're aware of what has changed so you don't always have to start from the beginning and read the whole document again. With that, we're going to open to public comment. Before we start public comment, once again, I just want to reiterate that this is public comment on the treatment processes, the alternative treatment processes. So please get your slip in if you haven't already. But we only are taking comments on the treatment processes. If you would like to comment on other TAC issues, you may do so at the end of the meeting. Karen, you have some slips for me? Yes, if anyone wants to get slips, please get them in so we have an idea of the timing that we have for public comment here.
They really didn't have any substantive comments, and remember, there should be a public record of what's said. So it's not enough just to put down so-and-so discusses something, but you should actually put down what they discuss and the points they make. I just want to reiterate a problem with, I think, the process regarding the fine screening. Obviously, this is a draft, and so I'll reiterate my comment from last week that First, this should be looked at in its entirety, and any objections or questionable findings, or any time you have questions about where the findings came from, or any time you want to question anything, that should be handled up front, because now you're working with a document and you're making an analysis without possibly having all the information or all the facts, you know, completely understood. So I think that's a problem with the with the way this process is moving. And by way of giving an example here of where I think this particular Chapter 4 might be flawed, in Table 4.1, it provides a basis for the upper and average cost estimates of projects, and it bases it on three local projects. And one of those is CMC, and if you notice, CMC's costs are almost double the one that has the least cost. This actually skews the cost basis that they're using throughout the chapter and raises the cost. I believe that CMC is a fluke, and I think anybody that's worked for the Department of Corrections like I have realizes that there's often some excessive contracts that are granted and also poor oversight of spending. So I think that's an inflated cost there. And by the way, that's what controls all the costs throughout, and it could be as much as double if you're basing it on those particular findings. Okay, 4.1, Carolla talks about tertiary treatment and preparing for future water quality regulations. Please don't forget that some of those regulations are probably going to center on pharmaceuticals and other emerging pollutants, and that in the both the NWRI report and also the Ripley report, they talked about how having those are putting water onto ground and using topsoil as well as the Vado zone will help filter that out, so that might be a consideration. And Broderson doesn't have a Vado zone, apparently, so it's not good for that. Am I out of time? Do I have a little bit more time?
Could you finish your sentence? No, you're out of time.
Okay, let's see. One last point. Just an environmental... I think environmental, I think it's a little bit oversimplified to just talk about footprint. For one thing, just the cost to mitigate
please
the different volumes.
Sentence.
Okay. Should look at the volumes of some of the solids that are there and what it might take to mitigate a spill and so forth. Thank you
very much. Our next speaker is James Ketch, do I have that right? Tikash, okay, followed by Dave Dugan.
James Tikash, Los Osamon, thank you also for the format change and the fact that this is being broadcast. I know we're on Chapter 4, but I'll read quickly from Chapter 7 as discussed in the rough screening analysis and anything the county is looking at. Well, why not have it right here in Table 4.9, where all five are mentioned. Table 4.10, Table 4.11, 4.12, 4.13, everything's mentioned except the MBR. 4.14, 4.15, this is where it should be. It's a treatment process that's still on the table and still can be considered. So it should be addressed in here so we can, you heard several from the TAC saying we don't know what the energy requirements are. We don't know what the area needed is. You know, that should be in here. So if it's going to be compared, we can compare it here. That's thank you.
Thank you very much. Dave Dugan, followed by Bo Cooper.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. Here we are. The Tri-W, the MBR, is out. It's not in the chapter. So it got past the rough screening, and now it's going to get past the fine screening. There's the problem. Carrillo knows this information. It's down at the LOCSD as well. Cost, energy use, it's all down there. Whose project was it before? So if you need to know something about the Tri-W project, go to the CSD office and ask. That's how simple it is. How much are we paying Carrillo to withhold information on the most expensive project per capita per person? And while we didn't have the information, we couldn't get it to you in the fine screening. That's BS. We all know that. An actual comparison in the rough screening and in the fine screening Tri-W would not make the grade. We know that. I didn't like seeing that. Not enough information. That upsets me. How many millions are we spending? They should be fired. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bo Cooper, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good evening. Bo Cooper. I need to turn to, I want to talk to the financial people especially, and based on Appendix C of the fine screening, which is entitled Basis of Cost Evaluation. And I'll point 1.1 talks about this project memorandum provides procedures and guidelines for estimated capital and O&M costs for the project. And then 1.2, the people who are dealing it are called the Association for the Advancement of Cost Engineering International. I take it they're the experts who certify and do all that kind of stuff. At the very bottom of page one of the appendix, it says, for most of the components of the project, of the projects developed as part of the LOC, Los Osos Wastewater Project Development, cost estimates are developed by this group based on class four, right? Class four, they have a chart on the next page about class four. Class four estimates of price range up to 15% under estimates, up to 50% over. So whatever numbers you come up with, they accept because of the limited information, because it's still all initial fine screening, but not a developed project, not a designed. Whatever numbers you do have in terms of finance can go up to 50%, include $13 to $25 million for electrical connection premium for separate electrical service, which may be necessary according to what kind of financing you do and what kind of project you do if you do Tri-W. So the numbers are still kind of fudgy and not at all clear, and I want people to know that for sure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have Lindy Owen, followed by Al Barrow.
Good evening. Thank you for filming. We do appreciate it, and I think those that are watching it will watch it a few times and maybe begin to understand some of this. I have a number of questions. One, and I'm not sure if it was the BioLac. You talked about 30, I think Rob, or no, John Fouché talked about 39 milligrams per liter going in from a step system of effluent. Oh, going from our step systems to that. And if we're 1 milligram over, we're 11 milligrams over on the average in our entire basin. So how do you say that the step system at my house that's collecting versus, you're saying that all the septics together produce 39 milligrams per liter, yet we're 1 milligram per liter over as an average in the basin, right, Rob? That's one question if you want to, I don't want to take up my time waiting, but I find that confusing because Morro Bay's got 48 milligrams of nitrate in their water and nobody's doing anything about that. And then when we go back to talking about the, where do you talk about the pretreatment in a septic tank that saves, it's 95% of the solids are removed, and then how do you add in the septage treatment if we were to follow Ripley's plan and put it in? So both those things, that I knew that was going to be a problem because they're completely different systems, and that's the beauty of the safety of a step system is that you keep the raw sewage where it belongs in a tank, not in pipes running in our drinking supply. So my question would be, where are you going to address that and how will you address it? And then I go to Dan Berman talked about some things. I don't understand how he says the size of the footprint means that there's a higher impact on biological resources. When you're taking grade 3 farmland and comparing it to a beautiful Esha that sat right out here once and needed 4-to-1 mitigation, how can you talk about that footprint? How can you not say that there's 4-to-1 mitigation that exists on a hill so that we could put a sewer plant right there? So I think you've got a real problem. That does not make any logical sense, and if you can explain it to me, I'm willing to listen. Same with odor treatment. I don't know how you can say that a biological system that produces less odor in a ponding system, people I mean, you remember Rose Bowker was very pleased to sit and have a glass of wine right next to the ponding system up north. So that was why we ended up with some of this. So I don't know where your odor information comes from. I don't think it makes sense. And remember, Tri-W, 4-to-1 mitigation for Broderson. Nothing else needs mitigating out here.
Thank you very much. Al Barrow, followed by... there you go.
Welcome. The second thing I want to offer you is that with private financing, I have a document here that shows $66 a month, $50 million over 20 years. So I'll submit that to you. And then I have another document from local directional drilling companies that show that the drilling costs are much less than are reported by Carrillo.
Mr. Barrow, we're talking about treatment alternatives.
Right,
this
right,
evening.
Right. So I just wanted to hand those over to you. And this is a part of the treatment because SEP is the primary treatment of the effluent. And if you don't know that, then you should learn that that is the case. So those are the three things I wanted to tell you. And then I wanted to ask John Fouché a question because it disturbed me to hear that step collection had such high nitrate values. When you look at industry documents, you know, the engineering books like Sabonicus writes, the values are before conversion are 350 to 375 milligrams per liter of BOD. I think Rob Miller is familiar with these numbers. And that is before nitrogen is converted. So there's a great deal of nitrogen and ammonia in a gravity flow. So when you go to treatment, I think the numbers need to be adjusted for that, if you know what I mean, Rob. Does that make sense? So, you know, I'm a little concerned that you're laying something on the step treatment that is a little bit high for that treatment form. And I would like to say that you have an industry standard for conventional industry like Carrillo. Thank you. And that industry standard is not used in step collection and other viable treatments, pond treatments, and things like that. So I think you have to go to the industry to get the viable numbers, and those numbers are quite different, shockingly different, maybe three times lower. So if you would please research that. You can go to Nelson Environmental. You can go to Orenco, and they also have the Aventech, and I'd like to know why the Aventech tile system was excluded from the treatment. Could somebody answer that? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Could I get an answer to that question?
We'll do all comments after we're done with public comment. Frank Asilio, followed by Lacey Cooper.
Frank Asilio, Los Osos. First, I have a question regarding the M&O cost, the maintenance and operation cost. Is that a worst case scenario or best case scenario? Also for the environmental group, the chemical use of the different technologies, how much chemicals are used in each process, because you'll have to haul chemicals here. If you have to haul chemicals here, whether it's here or over there, there's a possibility of spillage. There's a possibility of it venting into the air. And what those technologies, you know, I don't understand that part of it. If there are grants available for any of the particular technologies that you were up in this area, Highland and stuff, and over by 6th Street, the lights are on, or vice versa. So that's a concern, too. There will be outages. There has always been outages in this area. Also, if they're going to be needed for additional, talk about footprints, additional electrical systems developed to handle the enormous amount of power that would be needed on one system compared to another system. And that's all the questions, basically, on this chapter. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Lacey Cooper, followed by Richard Marketson.
Hi, this is Lacey Cooper. I wanted to read briefly from a table from the Ripley report from last summer because There wasn't data provided by Corella for energy use for the MBR, so I'll just read this quickly. It has MBR plus the other treatment alternatives you're considering. And here they have MBR with nitrogen removal at a cost of $65.2 million. The unit cost is 50.16, this is in dollars, per GPD. That's a unit, you know, I don't know all the things, but the approximate energy intensity, kilowatts per acre foot, is 3,200. And then you go down to extended aeration, where the total cost is $16.8 million, and the approximate energy use is 1,400 kilowatts per acre foot. Then you have BioLac, which total cost $17.5 million. Then you have the energy usage at 800 kilowatts. Then you go down to oxidation ditch, $22 million. And then you have 1,200 kilowatts per acre foot. You have a trickling filter at $8.2 million. And then they have a 700 kilowatts. Then you have Nelson Ponds with $18.7 million and 800 kilowatts. So you see there's quite a vast difference in energy usage between the MBR at 3,200 kilowatts with, say, something like Nelson Ponds with 800. And they commented that the unit cost was quite elevated for an MBR at Tri-W. So I just wanted to put those numbers out, and you might want to look at that report. Also, I had a question. It was done under the financial, but I thought they said that in your report that there was $700,000 per year for, maybe I misheard it, for the O&M for the Tri-W, but I was under the impression, this is again going with the Ripley report, that it was over $2 million for O&M. So there's quite a... So I would like environmental also to look at the energy usage. And also with environmental, I felt it was a bit sketchy because they didn't really talk about the odor problems of having a plant downtown. There is quite a bit of controversy about how much odor it will produce, even with odor mitigation, and also airborne pathogens. And also when you have overflow basins here, they were worried about if kids were using playing fields, if there was going to be, there was some experts. They were actually experts.
Richard Margetson, the documents that you looked at or that you read off of tonight, it would be nice in the future if the community also had those documents in front of us. You know, you're spewing lots of numbers and stuff, and it's real hard to keep up. I'd even be willing to contribute towards copying costs if it's an issue. It would also be nice, maybe I still don't understand the process, but when is the interaction going to be between the subcommittees? Is that coming up after public
Yes.
comment? Okay. Okay. And then just two quick comments. Three. It would be nice if the MBR process was evaluated for cost in this analysis, because, and Rob can correct me if I'm wrong, but I haven't looked at it for a while, but didn't the draft revenue plan have total O&M for the Tri-W project at somewhere around $2.4 million, $2.5 million, and energy costs for the project in total was around $500,000. And I remember that number because we used to comment repeatedly, they only had a $50,000 contingency built in, and we used to say if energy costs went up 10%, that wiped out your contingency each year for your O&M budget. And then the other comment is there's a lot of charts in here, and there's a lot of assumptions based on, or cost assumptions based on the size of the facility. And if the flow analysis is wrong in Chapter 1, and that follows through the rest of the document, then most of these numbers are wrong as far as cost. And some of the differences in size aren't proportional by the reduction in size, if you look at it a little closer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And our last speaker is Ann Norman.
Hi, Ann Norman, Los Osos.
My comments are really purely directed at the environmental analysis. I agree with previous speakers that focusing on footprint is too simplistic. I remember going to a TAC meeting where you talked about your criteria for the environmental group, and the community over and over echoed the significance of long-term environmental sustainability with a highlight on energy use as a big player in that. In addition, concerns about having a low impact on the community, and also you had put up a number of these different type of CEQA-type things. The other groups managed to do what sounded like a pretty fine-point, detailed analysis of the different treatment options based on these kinds of criteria, and I might have missed something in your report, but it didn't strike me that that's what's really happened. So I'd like to hear information about a breakdown for energy use. The finance group seemed to be able to do that, and so I would imagine you guys could too. Impact of sludge removal, as far as an environmental concern, is a big one. Need for mitigation, the choice of site. And choice of site also comes down to impact on how many people in Los Osos are affected, especially when we're talking about comparing to Tri-W, where the thing is right in the middle of the town, next to the community center, et cetera. Potential for spills, need for mitigation against that should be considered by the environmental group. Chemicals needed for treatment.
I agree with one of the previous speakers on the reports. It would be much easier to follow if written reports were available, if time allows, on the subcommittee reports. As it relates to treatment, I'd like to hear a county update on ag reuse. That seems to be a critical number. Is there any indication of what kind of cooperation we're going to get from the farmers? As the finance report pointed out tonight, there could be some huge cost savings on the percentage of flows that need to be denitrated, et cetera. So that would be great to know what kind of cooperation the farmers might be leaning towards. Cost for kilowatts, that's a big one for me. I think I saw 12 cents in the report. Seems low to me. At least in 10 to 20, 30 years out, we really need some sort of a basis. These costs are anybody's guess and likely to be very high. Speakers in the past have suggested the possibilities of blackouts or brownouts. I think it's quite likely that that will happen from time to time over 30 years. I haven't heard talk of generators. I assume we'll have them. But I think we need to avoid shutdowns and high fines because of spills or overflows. Because of the kilowatt costs, I'm still in favor of investing our dollars in land over energy. I think it's going to be much better spent over the decades. A number I'd like to see also is total sludge tonnage or total sludge processing costs in the ponds. I think I heard two numbers every 15 to 20 years. Those will be desludged. I'd be interested to know what the total tonnage would be, or the total cost cumulative over those that 15 or 20 year period of a pond, compared to the, I think it was referred to as continual sludge production that may be in BioLac, oxidation, or Tri-W. Again, I've mentioned I'm in favor of investing in land over energy. Although listening to the environmental report tonight, I do have concerns over the archaeological impact and odor control, but I think those can be managed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And lastly, Alan Perlman.
Hello, Alan Perlman. I was concerned that the TAC is proceeding two steps ahead when one step back occasionally, which is only natural for a process like this. And unfortunately, I can't give you all that much from what I've reviewed of the materials, but I would like to hit on a couple of things that I found in the comparisons, and those would be the financial page. It identifies a cemetery as having insufficient acreage for revenue-generating options. However, that comment didn't appear.
Alan, we're talking about treatment technologies this evening.
I see. Well, Well, I'm not going to be able to take that much further, but I will actually quote from Gordon Taylor. Gordon Taylor isn't here today. He did prepare a report that he sent to TAC members.
We're on treatment technologies tonight.
This is chapter four.
Sludge is coming up later in a future meeting.
Well, this is his analysis of chapter four, and sludge is an element within treatment. Are you comfortable suppressing it?
Yes, I am.
Well, we shall talk again.
Thank you very much. Okay, with that, we're going to now bring this meeting back to the TAC for discussion, and hopefully you folks have been making notes on questions and comments, and in the course of discussions, you can address those, and Rob, you seem to have some there, so why don't you start it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't know if we're going to try to address the community's questions as we go, or I can just knock off a few of the technical ones.
Go ahead, and as you've got them, we'd like to get as many of those answered as we can.
If you like. For Keith Weimer, I thought one good thing would, in terms of looking at the effect of the CMC cost skewing, because that was a high cost, is to look at the Ripley report versus the Corolla numbers, and I think you'll find that they're pretty similar in magnitude as far as most of the technologies. And then, let's see, we do have a lot of the information on the MBR project available from the old project. Lindy had a question about why the nitrate level of 39 milligrams per liter when compared to what's in the ground. I think that the issue is where that nitrate is measured. The report looks at the nitrate level coming right out of the plant, sampled right out of the plant, versus what we're sampling today, which is out of the ground in that first zone of sampled water. So it would be a different comparison. The 39 milligram per liter was effluent, and the 11 milligram per liter that you were thinking about was the shallow groundwater level. Also, the report does allow that 39 can be dropped by adding certain technologies, even with STEP. As to where there's talk of the pretreatment effect of a septic tank, in two basic places, well, three. One is in the strength of the wastewater, which they did acknowledge a significant reduction in strength for STEP effluent. And then in Table 5.1, they acknowledge that for STEP effluent, you would only generate about one-fourth the amount of sludge. So that was a significant. I know we're focused on treatment tonight, but they're so interrelated, it's hard to break them. And then Mr. Barrow was asking about the Nelson system. And just to note that the note that finance picked up on about nitrification, which says the ability of a partially mixed facultative pond to fully nitrify should be ascertained during value engineering, that was directed towards the information that Nelson had provided that showed several million-dollar savings to do a cheaper nitrification process. So I think the county is still open to looking at that specific approach to a pond technology to try to knock off a few million off the nitrification number. But when you look at the overall magnitude of the costs, you know, $18 million was the Ripley's estimation of STEP versus $22 million was the county's number. They're really not that far. And then one more. Lawson was wondering where the total, where the treatment cost associated with solids handling was addressed. That's in a future TAC meeting, but Table 5.16 will give you the number you were looking for. 5.16. That's all.
Thank you. I think there was a lot of good information, at least that I heard coming in. Maybe I'd like to start off pushing it towards the environmental group, because there was several comments on having taken into account other hazardous materials associated with the treatment plants. Do you folks want to comment, or anyone want to say, but do we need to add something in our criteria there or what?
Well, I think that is, first I want to thank everyone for their comments. I thought there was a number of really good comments. I'd like to respond to a number of things, and other folks can jump in here as need be. In terms of the chemicals needed, different different technologies and the volumes of chemicals, that's something I'm afraid we've got to pass back to Rob and maybe eventually to Carol. I think that may be a significant issue if there's really substantial differences between the different technologies, but that information, unless I totally missed it, there wasn't much discussion of that in Chapter 4, and so we don't have too much to chew on for that. There was a number of comments talking about the site, about Tri-W, and about the footprint, the impact, environmental impact of a site, a plant here versus a plant elsewhere. This was not a discussion about siting. We were talking about MBR as a treatment technology. We understand that it's not really being considered at any other site, but we've talked about siting at our last meeting, and we did talk about the resources particular to this site versus resources elsewhere. So when I was talking about, so I just want to make that distinction. Our pro-con analysis for this chapter is about MBR technology. It's not about the Tri-W site. So when we talk about its proximity to the bay or its ESHA classification, those are discussions about site. Those are important discussions. We've had some of them. We're going to have more of them. It's going to come up again. But that wasn't something we were considering in this chapter, and I understand it's challenging for us, and I think it's challenging for everyone to break these things apart. Similarly with sludge, we're talking about how much sludge is generated by the different processes. That's an important environmental, financial, engineering consideration.
Excuse me.
Yes.
It's going to be a real bad pause.
All right.
Could you just turn that off?
All right. There we go. Not sure if that's helping or not. I don't know if someone else's mic is on. And then again, sort of on siting, someone mentioned this site needed to be mitigated and that there wouldn't be any mitigation needed at other sites. I think there's going to be mitigation required at any site. The level of it will depend on the resources that are identified on the site, but mitigation is going to be needed anywhere. And it's actually sort of especially confused because this site has already been mitigated. So while it's classified as more sensitive habitat than some of the other sites we're considering, at least with what we know now, it's going to be challenging to figure out how to do that in pro-con because much of the mitigation is. Our feeling was that it was going to be more meaningful to look at the energy use of total packages just because, so this kilowatt hours, does that include the additional levels of nitrification and denitrification that would be needed to turn it into reusable effluent as we decide? So there's, this is sort of one piece. This is probably the biggest energy use piece, but there's going to be energy needed to move water and effluent to different sites or for different disposal options. So I think we're very much on board that energy use is a key environmental issue. The challenge, and there's good, clear, straightforward information in this chapter about the energy needed just for the treatment itself. I think what's going to be most important is to look at the whole picture in the end, and I think it's sort of a challenge to keep putting that off, but we're going to get there. I guess with that, I'm not sure if there was any other comments that I missed.
Go ahead. Does that work? No?
Yep.
Yes. I think, one, this is a question to either Rob or to staff, but the question was brought up about airborne pathogens. And that's something, just like chemicals, that we'd need more information about before we could get into or discuss. So if we could get some more information, if there is a difference in airborne pathogens from the various treatment technologies or not, I think that would be helpful. So we put that in the same boat as the chemical uses.
Mr. Chair? I think it would be good, when we're talking about airborne, to talk just briefly about odor control, because often people associate those two things with each other. I think one thing to recognize is that in most of the industry, odor control is focused on certain, you know, again, you see the broken up component by component analysis here, where a treatment plant itself has a component by component analysis that make it even more complex. But odor control in most plants is associated with things like those first processes where the waste is introduced, called the headworks, very odorous. You know, just you can go to plants like Morro Bay and others where you're primarily smelling the headworks, and then processes that relate to the management of sludge. Those two are, you know, generate 99% of the odors in a treatment plant.
And those components can be covered with any of the options, which with pretty much the same level of treatment. And it's the active biological portion, the aerated portion, which is fully aerobic and doesn't tend to generate odors, that's the portion that would be different among the various footprints in terms of covering it, but that's also the portion that is very unlikely to produce the odors. So, you know, you might have an ox ditch like in Pismo where they covered the headworks, but they don't cover the aeration basins. So MBR is small enough to cover everything, but any of the options can cover the most odorous processes.
What about the pathogens? Is that an issue? Or
you know, as far as airborne pathogens, the industry, I suppose, doesn't, at least in the engineering side, there hasn't been a lot of detailed work, physical work at the treatment plant level, other than controlling the odors that often...
been able to determine our pro-con analysis based on the information that we had, and I think it would be good to have more information in regards to chemicals and whatnot. In response to some of the comments made by the community, and I'd be happy to follow up afterwards if you can catch, so we can have a minute. Lawson made a comment investing on land over energy, and I'm curious whether that's directed to the treatment or alternative energy development. I wasn't totally clear on what we're doing with investing in land. I understood, but I'm not clear on clarifying that. If we could meet after, that would be great. I would even like to, I think, also to be clear on where we're pulling our electrical from. That seems like that would have some cost impacts as well as where we're talking about pulling it off of and distance and any other, you know, the amounts. Was another question I had. Also, the other question that I think also should... I thought would come up more in the treatment, and we talked about it briefly, but we're just not clear on the direction of how to incorporate into pro-con with some of the global warming or carbon footprinting type of information. We were discussed it, but there really wasn't a basis for which to take carry that discussion. So a little more clarification on what we might be thinking in that realm would be really helpful. Thank you.
What I'd like to do is, now that since the environmental committee has the focus at this point, and we've answered many of the questions that we got from the community, I'd like to have the rest of TAC comment not only on the pro-con analysis, but in the course of your doing your particular investigation on that chapter, you may have comments that pertain to environmental, and go ahead on those. So, Bob, why don't you start it?
Excuse me. I have a question for Rob to start with. None of the figures on the treatment systems in here, other than Tri-W, included odor control, did they?
Yeah, they did, because they used, like, Pismo Beach as a basis, and they've got odor control on that plant.
Okay. So the odor control at Tri-W was just more extensive because of the siting of the plant.
Correct. They covered everything, so as opposed to just the headworks.
But first thing I want to do is try to, we have a little discrepancy between the engineering figures and the financial team's figures. Under nitrification, denitrification for oxidation ditches, you have that step systems included at the $16 million figure. And we have that you have to add $3.6 million
to
it.
If you take a look
at the same thing for O&M.
Yeah, if you take a look at table 419 on page 424, they show that, I mean, it lists that out, and it basically says that it's not applicable, and it doesn't go into why they don't need it there.
No, but that is under gravity. You go down to step collection, and denitrification facility costs $3.6 million.
I was looking at you know what? That's a mistake on our part.
O&M is $250,000, and it makes
a kilowatt hour comes out to 21 cents per household connection per month. Now compare that with the other costs that we're talking about, and they're significantly greater. And also you talk about and it's been alluded to here, the unknowns in these construction costs. It means really, while we should pay attention to the energy issues, they don't at this point enter into the cost calculations for making a decision. They're still down in the noise level. The differences are, yeah. The other point I wanted to ask about, in our engineering committee, we listed O&M and electrical or energy costs as well as construction costs too, of course. It had been my hope that the financial committee, when they listed those, would also put down the present value of the 30 or 20-year annuity equivalent so we could actually have some numbers to compare, as opposed to just talking about $100,000 a year forever and so much, because this way we could start to look at apples and apples instead of apples and oranges.
If I may respond on a couple of things, Russ, I'll start with the energy thing. First of all, we are all very aware of the rising cost of energy and the carbon footprint. There's a sense of environmental responsibility. So we don't want to overlook that as one of the considerations. That's an important consideration. It's not the most expensive consideration. But at any rate, it needs to be in the considerations. As it relates to your second question, what was the second question? I'm sorry? Oh, present value. I think that we'll be getting, in order to do that, I think we'll get to the chapter 7 when we pull it together. We'll be doing life cycle costs. Sorry, George, go ahead. I'm going to switch back over to environmental, though. I kind of felt like I wanted to respond or ask questions of the environmental group. Very honestly, when I first saw and heard your presentation, I was pretty astonished how lacking in detail it was, too. And it helped, Maria, when you shared your thinking behind it. That was very helpful. So I would really encourage you to write in your questions or your considerations or your concerns, even if you don't have the information, because I'm going to assume that the Board of Supervisors isn't going to read the full fine screen. Now, maybe they will. That'd be great. But I'm not going to assume that. I'm going to assume that they're going to read the pros and cons and not be able to go back and look at table such and such.
Mark Hutchinson had to submit an extensive set of questions to the team, so they do have quite a few of our questions. We just didn't jot them down here. We believe so.
Said for the sake of public is even if you don't have the information, at least get your questions in the pros and cons, please.
Yeah, I think in the future we'll do that. What our intent was at this point was to ask the questions and then come back and revise the pro-con analysis once we got answers to the questions. So in our working group, Mark did come up. We just need to look at the big picture, and that's just our approach to this.
John come in.
Just a quick general comment on kind of following up on what you're saying. We find it as engineering folks kind of awkward looking at each component of this process or processes without looking at the total process. It's kind of an awkward way of doing business, and it's been challenging for us. That's the approach that we're going with. It's going to be hard to change it, I guess, at this point. But it does seem to create problems by looking at just a component without following through for all of the components of a system. I'd also just like to make a comment about the fact that Tri-W is not in this document. It makes it awful hard to compare when the data is not there. We're looking at stuff. I've got Ripley's report. I've got Montgomery Watson's report sitting here. I've had questions about Tri-W, and a lot of it we're going off memory. Or we're trying to dig out information. It should be fairly clear that this information should be in this document so that we can do the evaluation and analysis and a pro-con analysis that includes Tri-W. Otherwise, I don't think that we've got all the cards out on the table. And I think that's what we're trying to do, is put the information out there that's accurate and factual, not misinformation, not information that's coming by memory, but stuff that's been documented. And so that's a comment that I think at least I strongly feel about. It makes it, again, another difficult way of doing an analysis when you don't have all the information in front of you. Thank you.
I think that's a good comment. In fact, most people on TAC I've heard have asked for more information on Tri-W, so we can do. We said in the beginning, and it was agreed upon, that Tri-W would be part of our pro-con analysis at each stage, and except for the one chart that we got on siting, the rest we're having to pull from at the seat of our pants, so to speak. So I hope that the project team is noting that problem that we're having. Bob?
I just wanted to echo John's comment about the difficulty of doing it one component at a time, because we usually spend about 20 minutes of our first meeting figuring out how we're going to separate out this particular component. And in my mind, the environmental would be way more difficult than the engineering in separating it out. So I think we're kind of seeing the result of that. Of course, we're going to expect a parade size final report, you know, when we put it all together. I'd like to ask, and I know this doesn't have anything to do with Chapter 4, but it comes up every single meeting. Can we have just a short discussion about the gallons per day per capita going into the plant?
Sure. That's our meeting.
Yeah, yes.
Okay. I've heard the comments. I've read everybody's papers on it and things, and my comment is that many of the papers that have been written are coming back down. You're working the outside water use. And when you look at some of the areas that are along the coast, you find out, like, Santa Cruz has a 74-26 ratio, outdoor to indoor use. And you start running the numbers on that, and you find out that the 65 gallons per day is fairly close. And I realize it's anecdotal, but it is probably the only actual, real, tangible evidence we have other than speculation, is that I had a water meter in my septic tank for 2 years, and over the two-year period, we averaged 67 gallons per day per person in the household.
Anybody?
Can you follow that up?
Absolutely.
Just very briefly, I think it was in the first 20 seconds of our first meeting that this issue was raised when we started to discuss the rough screening report. And it took about 20 minutes to get through that. And I was delighted to see that the community echoed that at the next TAC meeting. And we could spend a lot of time talking about whether it's 65 gallons or 70 gallons or 60 gallons. But that is not the time to do it. We're still in the conceptual phase. We're getting our arms around the problem. We're trying to figure out what to do. The time you worry about that is when you're in your final design. Furthermore, if you know how engineers design pipes, pipes do not come if you decide you need a 4.12-inch ID for a pipe. That isn't the one you pick because they don't make them. You'll end up with a 4.5-inch or 5-inch pipe. And usually good engineers will choose the fatter one because it does, the bigger one, because it doesn't cost very much more money. And compared to the total cost of putting your trench in and all the other labor costs, it's down in the noise level. And so good engineers always build these things extra slack in them. The people doing the final design, I would expect, would come up with a better analyses than we're looking at right now. That's for the collection system. It's a little different, I think, for the plant, but usually good engineers, again, will design these systems in such a way so that you can handle extra input with perhaps a little bit extra in energy costs. And should you have a big change, then, of course, the plant would have to be changed, and that, would, of course, goes back to our footprint. And we've been looking very hard at making certain we have adequate footprint for all the needs of our sewer system in the future. So the time to really raise this question is when we start to look at the final design to make certain that the engineers are doing that right. And usually that's handled by a peer review by another engineering company or another engineer.
Thank you. Is there anyone else on TAC would like to speak on this particular item? Rob?
I think the other item of discussion, I agree that the best time to do it is, number one, when you have all the information. I think hopefully the community will get to a point where the two water purveyors are working cooperatively so water use across the whole community can be analyzed, which we don't have today because of the pending litigation. And during the county's due diligence
water reuse, the things that really stood out to us were the size of land that was going to have to be disturbed and the amount of energy was going to be used. And the energy use, because I said it's summarized well in here, we want to see how it plays out across the whole project. So I guess my question, and we also heard about the chemicals needed, and I'm not sure how much those vary. We're going to get that information. I guess my question to the other groups are, aside from the amount, from an environmental point of view, what else should we be thinking about?
I have one, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
And I was thinking about this before you brought that up. And one that you might think about is for construction phase impacts, the duration of construction, because there could be a significant spread difference between the technologies. For instance, our Pismo Ox Ditch, we were involved in that one a year and a half or something like that, maybe 2 years by the time you get done. Or, a pond or earthen construction, even though it might be a bigger footprint, might get completely done in 9 months. So for short-term impacts, construction phase impacts, duration of construction might be important.
And we're going to hit you up for those estimates?
I would add, I know that the financial group sees things that we figure belong to somebody else's group, so we try really hard to screen those out of our pros and cons, but we looked at the financial group not only for biological and archaeological impacts, but also for community impacts, as well as energy responsibilities, demands, requirements. I'm trying to remember what was all on your list of criteria. Do you have that with you?
Yeah. So construction impacts, that's really about the immediate actual construction of the technology. We were sort of thinking that was scaled to the size, but perhaps it's not, and we need to revisit that with some more information. Community impact, that gets to sort of noise and odor, and that's more in terms of the ongoing operation. There wasn't any real discussion of that in the fine screening report. We pulled some odor and noise information from the rough screening report, but from Rob's description, it sounds like maybe it actually doesn't vary much between the technologies because you really only need to deal with specific components of the site. And then biological and archaeological resources, those we think it is pretty reasonable to tie them to the footprint. Obviously, the site's important, but that's a separate discussion. And then the energy use, and again, there's a nice simple table in here of the energy use. The question is really just how does that end up combining with the steps before the plant and the steps after the plant. So our list is construction, community impacts, biological resources, archaeological resources, and energy use.
We did have system failure in our original list, but there really nothing popped out at us at that point, so we didn't represent it here. I don't know if my group actually noticed that, but we're in a situation like we were last time. We reviewed all the technologies,
right.
Wondering if we should continue to spend our time reviewing everything that we're being offered, or should we go ahead and do what the other groups are doing and do what's top four? Or what do we?
As we look at our agenda, we get to our next one is collection system. So yes, we can do it all. the only other one that, I'll be frank with you, I have not spent time on that chapter yet, was the solid treatment. Whether we're suggesting.
Okay, just the. Like Dan had said, you guys would pick up energy. In other words, we have energy usage in ours, but if it doesn't, I really liked Russ's 1 million plus rule from last week, and we've tried to kind of work things into kind of that, although we might be lowering the bar from a million. And then on the couple other things that were in our report, the high BOD content, I'm not sure exactly who would get that, whether that would be an engineering thing or if that would be environmental. I thought engineering as well. And residence time and things like that, those are types of things that I think the engineering or environmental, probably engineering, should be looking at.
Thank you. Any other comments? Go ahead, Marshall.
This one issue continues to come up, and I think it's a particularly appropriate in this chapter, which is the energy consumption. And I think everybody agrees that sustainability is our goal here. But what I see is us sort of dancing around the issue, and I don't know how we really address the energy question, because as Dan said, 4.11 table, I mean, lays it all out. Our concern, again, is we don't – there's different amount of solids produced by the various collection systems and the disposal system. So, and I think Bob said that most appropriately, it's really difficult to separate these systems out. So we have a problem with saying, okay, the energy consumption just of Chapter 4 items is X, Y, or Z, or giving them a pro-con analysis without knowing what's coming into the process and going out of the process. So I think energy is an issue that we're going to have to confront, but I don't know when and how that gets confronted.
Well, wouldn't you think, though, I mean, today in today's environment in the country and the world, carbon footprint is becoming a major thing, factor, and we would probably want our wastewater project to be exemplary in its, you know, how it deals with that. And, right. And so you could almost look at it from, you know, just if it uses more energy, bigger carbon footprint, it's probably not as good as one that uses less. Or if there's another way of generating that through alternate.
I thought that was one of the major items we looked at when we looked at siting in Chapter 7 was the ability to provide alternate energy or on-site energy production, be it through solar, wind, or methane, or cogeneration system. So, again, I guess we just have problems decoupling the energy from the other aspects of the project. So I think sustainability is a big issue, but, again, I think it's just something that we're trying to deal with as we go along. And we're just not going to have until we get to the very end, you know, an answer to that question.
Okay, go ahead, Rob.
And I appreciate Marshall's comments. I agree. I think, to my way of thinking, every chapter that we review, just like I saw the technical folks brought in step and gravity, the collection system element to this chapter, I think when we talk about sludge, we want to bring in treatment technologies to that chapter and talk about energy at each step of the way, and then you're right. It's going to be Chapter 7 before you really put it all together.
Because you can say, well, we're not going to do that. Okay, then drop that. Oh, well, we're going to do this, and then we've got to add this. And it seems like maybe from the engineering community, we either have to make some assumptions and say we're going to get to a level 2A or 2B, and we're going to cost and look at the system relative to getting there. And Rob can't keep coming up with, oh, well, we might have another way of getting a little more nitrates out of that page cost, and, you know, those kinds of things, you know, are just whoops. So I think that in this whole process here, we ought to make, I get back to this whole thing, we need to make some process assumptions. You know, what do we want to build here? And what level do we want to take this whole animal to? And the costs will follow once you have a description of what we're trying to accomplish. The finance people can't sit here and say, we're going to build a plant like this, or this is what it is. But we'll follow, but somebody has to lead.
Good comment, Jay. Russ, you want to go?
I want to be careful here, because I don't necessarily... I'm not certain if I represent the views of the entire engineering group here. So I'll just represent myself for the moment. And this ties in with the remarks by Keith Weimer and one other gentleman here who I've lost. Lawson Schaller. One case, the question came up, what happens if about ag reuse, and what happens if somebody changes their mind? In the case of Keith Weimer, he asked about the possibility of change in the environmental regulations with respect to pathogens or something else. and we're building a sewer for the future, which is unknown. And that's your concern, and it's my concern, and I think everybody's concern. And the one rule that we built in right away in terms of our core values was that we must have flexibility. And that means that we have to, at the very minimum, be in a position to produce water, the final water quality, at least two, if not more, levels. Ag reuse is one level. Basin recharge is another level. And maybe even possible a blending, which is another level. Now, what the size of the tertiary treatment plant is determines all that. And if we decide to have a little tertiary plant, okay, but we better be prepared to have space or assign resources down the road so that tertiary plant's bigger. And that's, to be, as I see it, going to be an initial investment choice. So above all else, I'd recommend flexibility, because 10 years from now, the regs change, something else happens, we get into trouble in terms of our recharge. Whatever may involve, we may be having to really polish our water so we can get ourselves out of trouble. We better be ready for that in terms of the decisions we make now. That doesn't mean we have to make all the investment now, but we don't want to do anything to preclude those changes in the future. Now, that doesn't answer your question as to how do we cost this out now.
John.
Russ, I think it's 20 years of build-out. I think the sizing of the facility, that's set, and that's based on those numbers. I agree with flexibility, because regs change all the time, no doubt about it. And we want to be able to add on membrane, RO someday possibly. Who knows what we may have to do in the future. Water is a resource in California. It's just a resource, and it's something that we really have to protect. Just as far as sizing a plant, we are looking at the population of Los Osos that build out within the urban reserve line, I guess.
Yes, Rob.
Just a brief comment in response to Jim. And I totally hear you. That would make the analysis much more straightforward. May I suggest maybe a bracketing, a sensitivity, since you guys did a great job really laying things out, a sensitivity analysis that says, what if, we all want to get to, at least in my mind, ultimately level 3, where we're balancing the basin under at least current use, and then level 4 if we're going to go to build out. For options that maximize the use of ag exchange, what's the sensitivity to the various technologies and processes to that extreme? For options that maximize Broderson type disposal, what are the sensitivities in that extreme? And then can we bracket those?
We assume the combination.
Which I think is a good thing to do. You end up with a lot of permutations if you don't do that, but I think it's important to look at the two extremes, so you have the bookends and take a sample in the middle, and it gives you a really good understanding. And so that is probably the best.
Any other comments on that subject? Are there any comments or questions of the engineering group on their PROCON analysis and what they came up with? And go ahead, Karen.
Thanks, Bill. I don't have a question really of engineering, but when I look at the engineering thing as well as environmental, I wonder if for next go-around we might use the format that you've developed for the final report, and that is taking one option and playing it all the way out before you move on to the next option. Is that a fair suggestion?
Yes, it is. What I'll try to do to help the groups is use that format and give you some blank sheets that have your criteria in it, so all you have to do is kind of fill in the blanks. I can do that for you. Any other comments on engineering?
I guess I have a question. Maybe everyone will have to answer it individually. I don't know. When I look through
the summary. I mean, I think you guys covered it, but it's hard to see. There's not very much that jumps out as extremely different, with the exception of the facultative ponds. And I guess the big difference is the collection system, which we're going to talk about next time.
On how we use those words.
I would comment that nothing jumps out drastically because we don't know what kind of collection system is going to be coming in and what's going to be going out and what level it's going to be. And all of the systems are equally, as John said, are equally capable of adding treatment trains to accomplish different levels of treatment depending on what kind of effluent we eventually want to come out with, which is dependent on our disposal reuse strategies. So that's pretty much why it sort of came out vanilla.
Yes. I'll just give it. I think the county has identified three technologies that merit going to the next level, and my encouragement would be in the next phase of this, assuming all those technologies have made it through fine screening, are going to be subject to an advisory survey, is during due diligence to fine-tune the very best oxditch, the very best BioLAC system at the best cost, the very best pond system at the best cost, so we can really sharpen the pencils at that time to get hopefully more separation between the options.
Marshall?
Oh, okay.
I just had a couple kind of detailed questions. I'm not sure if this is the appropriate place, but I'm going to ask anyway. In the BioLAC system, there's the plastic lined aeration bases. Is that replacement, is there a replacement sequence or cost that's figured into this, or what's the lifespan on those, and is that incorporated?
For a lining system, either for the pond or the BioLAC, would be generally a 60 mil high-density polyethylene liner with a 20-year life.
Right. Okay. And then the monitoring system that might be required for a Stepstead collection, and the collection's on table 4.2, is the monitoring system figured into the electrical and instrumentation section, or is that going to be come up in another area? Does that include the monitoring system?
This... Rob will give the definitive answer in this, but I'm rather certain that the cost we have here did not include the monitoring system, the step collection system, if that was your question. That cost will be included when we discuss next week the collection system.
True.
Any other questions on engineering's pro-con? Okay, what about, last one would be then questions on the financials, pro-con. We had some. Are there any other questions or comments from the TAC on that? Well, seeing none, what I'd like to do, of course, within the TAC, is I think we've learned a lot about our pro-cons tonight. So we have a big job ahead of going back and looking at what we have done, and I think everyone recognizes we're asking quite a large task to not only have you prepare for next Tuesday's meeting, but then to go back and look at what you've done in the past. And we have a question from Ann Norma. Why can't you do a pro-con analysis of a given issue, one example, energy use, for that component? We understand that this is only one component you'll need to use. I think I'll try to answer that one, is the energy use comes into each of the components, and so as we bring the pro-con analysis forward, they should stand out. To do just a pro-con on energy, the biggest thing would be, I think, just a time issue to get that into another meeting. At this point, we are facing a deadline from the Board of Supervisors to have the information, have our report to them early August, and that does put a constraint on some of the things that were able to do, and that's why, of course, everything has been rushed for the TAC. I appreciate the time they've been putting into us. Oh, I'm sorry. Also, if a group has issues with doing their procon analysis due to lack of information or challenge of decoupling, that should be stated in the report up front. I think some of them did say that in the course of their reports. But we did have a problem. I'll let the community recognize. We did have a problem last week because at the time of our meeting, most of the project team happened to be in Sacramento, and they were gone for a good portion of the week. And so they didn't get all our questions till late, and we didn't get answers till late. I think that we should do a better job on that for the upcoming meeting. This is a question. Okay. There's a question on the environmental position. When will it be filled? And I think the answer is, I believe the 25th of June is when the applications have to be in. Is that correct, John?
29th.
Okay. Yeah, so nothing will happen until the 29th when the applications are in. Pardon?
I don't understand why
you're even feeding anybody in. Well, no, the process continues. This is just the beginning of the process. This goes on and on until we have a sewer built. So, okay, with that, we have, as I say, a whole number of people want to make comments. I'm going to decrease the time to 2-minute comments, and they have to be on TAC issues. If you have a comment, a question that is for the project team, I'm not going to or comment on that. I'm going to ask you to hold that. You have an ample period tomorrow to question the project team.
After all the money of buying the land, ruining the land, replanting the land, unplugging the land, people don't even know how complicated the Brodersen site is for disposal. And I think it should be taken off the table. I listened this whole evening is all about it going up to Brodersen. And I just don't think it doesn't make
Lindy,
sense.
I think that's a question that you need to bring to the project team. TAC does not decide what's on the table and what's not on the table.
Well, it's also for you because I think you, I just wonder who came up with this whole process. I think I've listened to the comments tonight, and I think that it is the most complicated way that you could have ever taken apart all the technology in the world to build sewers when we know we have A or B. It's a step system or it's a regular raw sewage collection. I think Tri-W
30 seconds
needs to get off the table. It's insane. It'll need new permits, so I don't know why it has to stay on.
Thank you very much. Dave Dugan, followed by George Taylor.
Well, from the reports, from these little things we're getting here, chapter whatever and whatever, Tri-W is off the table, but it's going to be considered because it's not being considered here. For your education, Coastal Commission has a conditional permit to proceed, basically, and it's like 86 or something conditions. You guys need to look at that because it has all of the build-out numbers that they expected, as well as the water usage. And I think there's a part in there for every one of your subcommittees in that to look at. I think there is 80-something conditions. Isn't that right? And I think there's something in there for every one of your subcommittees. You need to look at that. And you'll look and see, you'll see, and it's a whole different way of seeing the Tri-W project versus something else. It's a whole different world compared to what Carrillo's giving you or somebody else is feeding you. So that's my big suggestion today is to look at that. I did that for the last few days. There was comments made last week on a possibility of building outside the urban reserve line and all that, and that'll tell you that it's not going to happen. The Coastal Commission has a pretty much a purview over that. They're not a political body. It's not a political decision. You're going to find that out. So when somebody says, well, it's going to be a political decision for expanding a building outside the urban reserve line, you're going to find out that the Coastal Commission will stop you dead in your tracks. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we have George Taylor, followed by Al Barrow.
George Taylor, Los Osos. I want to thank the chairman and the TAC for finally coming into the sunlight of speaking into a microphone. We can hear you. It's wonderful. We haven't had anything come out of this TAC that we could hear back here up to this point. Next is I think that it's very important that something was mentioned are in the tables are very much in question, and I think that we have the engineers here, and we should not be accepting anything that is old information. We should be just take the old information if you want to, but don't look at the figures and. Do your own calculating and give us some good numbers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I appreciate everyone for keeping these short. It helps. Al Barrow?
I want to get right to my points. Number one, I think we have to understand about the numbers, that these are numbers from a big pipe industry. Small pipe industry has considerably, I mean, maybe 2-3 ratio difference in numbers and values. And I think until I know the county is trying to get that information from Orenco on your next session for STEP, and that's really important. I gave you tonight something which you can download on case-environmental.org, which is a completely designed pond and costed system from Nelson, and it tells the energy values, and every single thing that you discussed tonight is included in that report. That was done by Nelson Environmental. I'd also like to mention that Dr. Ruhr told me today that he would be interested in considering working with your environmental committee. I don't know if the county would reject Dr. Ruhr, but Dr. Ruhr has extensive experience and knowledge and has served on a number of TAC committees. There's a number of fatal flaws in this document, and they say so in the very beginning of the document. They say the step collection could be a leaking problem because gravity would be a problem because of the seal of the joints as they move in the sand, earthquake or whatever, could create leakage of raw sewage into our drinking water aquifers. That's a fatal flaw. I think you need to consider those fatal flaws. Thank you. Is that 30 seconds?
Yes, it is.
Thank you. And finally, I'd like to say, just as a point of clarification, the pond system only runs one moving part, and that's the blower. That's it. So I would like to say the 218 is something that you're working towards, and I think if you don't get the private industry numbers down here, now we're talking $50 million for a complete system, there's nothing even close to that in your numbers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Frank Asilio, followed by James T. Cash.
Yeah, I want to follow up on some of the questions. Frank Casilio, is any of the technology able to produce the electricity by the technologies used in that? It's easier to produce electricity from that. Also, there was talk about green, going green, and I haven't heard about that. Grants available for going green, because if there's solar, wind or panels or methane or some other system, what grants are out there available that would drop the cost down to us, the public? The other thing is that I haven't heard about, you know, maybe I missed it, when you talk about environmental, about people, urban planning, how the effects will be on the people of the community too. And I don't know, even had, which has some of the best engineers in the country, and they've had their disasters. Currently, Atascadero State Hospital has this disaster. They have backup generator that they test every week. It's a big generator. They're probably pulling in National Guard generators right now to deal with some of the issues that they have up there, but it's a backup system that failed. So, you know, when I hear backup systems, I want to know that there's a backup system even to the backup system. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Richard Marketson, followed by Keith Weimer.
James T. Catch.
Sorry.
That's okay. Once again, the project at the Tri-W site will continue to be carried through the frying screening process for comparison purpose. I ask once again that the county and the project team see that at least the MBR gets in Chapter 4 so we can compare all individual components of that system cost-wise, and maybe some of the other chapters as that project, you know, sludge handling, you know, all those factors that should be carried through, and I've heard the many on the team mention that. And then quickly, the problem with not dealing with the flow issues now is how it affects plant sizing, which affects the site size. And I'll be honest, I don't know how much 200,000 gallons difference makes in the size of the plant or the size that you need for the location. But it raises suspicions, and I'm just reiterating not my opinion, but what I'm hearing in the community, that you would be having current rate payers paying for additional capacity for future users. It also raises some suspicions in the community that that you're planning for additional capacity for additional development, which many in the community have opposed, maybe even beyond build-out. But I think it's good to get it worked out now, and if not, at least provide detailed information on the facts used and the assumptions made to get the figure quoted, that it is quoted in the report. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Richard Marketson, followed by Keith Weimer.
Two minutes. I'm going to go as quick as I can on the flow analysis, but I do have a question of clarification on the energy, the 21 cents per month comment you made. I would like clarification on that, how you came to that, and it sounds substantially low. Things to consider on the flow analysis that weren't considered in this report. The assumption was that the entire build consumption for the water district was used, did not subtract those properties outside the prohibition zone that are serviced by the CSD water district. And one of them, folks, is one of their largest, maybe their largest consumer, the middle school. The report also doesn't look at the effect that one-third of the additional build-out will be new construction, and the Wallace Group Urban Management Plan stated conservatively that a new home under retrofit requirements would save 31 gallons per house. Years from the Los Osos CSD Water District is 287 gallons per household.
Can you finish your statement?
Inconsistent with the numbers used in reports trying to come up with average daily per capita consumption. And my last comment is, at some point, if this doesn't get corrected, it'll be very interesting to see what the Coastal Commission thinks about a plant being oversized. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Keith Weimer, followed by Lacey Cooper.
Keith Weimer. I'll reiterate what a few people said about needing to have Tri-W information out where everybody can see it, and it needs to be, you know, I guess, presented by the county. And everybody needs to be working with the same information. One important reason is that, I think actually, Paavo, you mentioned it in your introductory memorandum for the fine screening, that the communities, there's a community suspicion that the county is supporting Tri-W. Well, this is one way to alleviate that suspicion by getting all this out on the table. And secondly, if in this process, it turns out that Tri-W, as many people think, will get many cons in this process versus the alternatives getting a number of pros, then I think that'll help people get through the 218 process. Just a comment on the environmental committee or subcommittee. Consistency. If everybody else is going, you know, component by component, then in order for us to understand what's going on, you would have to do that as well. I think this is one place where energy could be pretty well separated out. You know, this is one of the places where the alternatives really do stand out. And also, I understood from the fine screening report that Broderson was supposed to be a mitigation for all the projects. If that's the case, then some of the other environmental considerations are supposedly mitigated by Broderson. I think that was an assumption in here. Rob,
30 seconds.
Finance, you know, the denitrification numbers, you shouldn't be using the full 100% denitrification. That's that $3.5 million because none of the options included a 100% denitrification need. Let's see, engineering, I'd like to hear something about the complexity of the systems and how much manpower would be involved and how much knowledge and training would be involved in working on some of these. And finally, water quality that I mentioned about the pharmaceuticals and emerging pollutants is not dealt with by tertiary treatment. That's best dealt with by a land application. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Lacey Cooper, followed by Bo Cooper.
Yes, I want to underscore some of the points that were made by other speakers and the TAC. I agree that it'd be great to have copies. It's a fairly small audience to have copies of the charts that you're reading from so we can follow along and then we can have more in-depth comments. And also, I share John Fouché's frustration about not having TRI-W included in the fine screening with the graphs, and that's something perhaps you could ask Mr. Pavlo and the project team to include in the chapters that you're going to be looking at. Also, evaluation of the fine screening, and perhaps, I don't know why he wasn't included, perhaps people feel he's opinionated, but everyone's opinionated, but his happens to be based on a lot of knowledge, and I think he would be a great asset to your committee. So if it's possible for you to do that, his application is already on file. And I just want to say thanks for having the microphones. So good luck.
Thank you very much. Bo Cooper, followed by Chris Alvey.
Bo Cooper, I'll talk in bullet points. Dr. Ruhr, if he is not appointed to this committee, you guys will lose credibility, and that's an important thing. Also, what John said about the TRI-W being in the pro-con analysis, it really ought to be. We need to compare it. You've said from the beginning it would be in the thing, and it hasn't been. To give lip service is of no value, and again, for your credibility, you need to get the TRI-W as a good comparison. Also, John talked about build-out. On page 2.2 of the fine screening, it says, the TRI-W project did not meet the required capacity for build-out flow. The short flow capacity was deferred to a future project to solve. More money, different project, new process. I'm concerned about that. Least affordable, John Waddell's nice phrase. It's least unaffordable is not a reasonable thing. The Urenco report talks about why is affordable. And why is affordable, as we know, between $50 and $100. The project looks like it's $200. You cannot kick people out of their homes. You cannot destroy the village to save it. I'm old enough to be a Vietnam-era kind of guy. EIR. Let me compare the gravity to step-steg. In the EIR, the draft EIR from November 2000, they compare the, wrong one.
30 seconds.
Thank you. They compare the environmental advantages compared to conventional gravity step between step-steg and gravity. This is on page 299 of the draft. And the impacts for step-steg are less for geology, hydrology, groundwater, drainage, cultural resources, air quality, noise, biological resources, overall less impacts. So that's the EIR. If you're going by the EIR, That's where it's at. So I want to thank you, and good night.
Thank you very much. Chris Albee, followed by Lisa Schicker.
Hey, Chris Albee, CDO number 1019. All right. You use your toilet. We go from there to the septic tank, which converts everything to a nice liquid effluent, and then it goes into a leach field that's dribbled back down through, in my case, a 40-foot soil column. That's pretty much unique to the United States here, what we have. And we get a large portion of that water back. It goes in, part of it goes into the aquifer, some of it gets evaporated, whatever. But we get a lot of that water back. Now, what are we going to do? Throw that out.
Thank you very much. And our last speaker is Lisa Schicker.
Hi, everybody. Lisa Schicker. It may have been said earlier, but I'd like to stress again, get Tri-W in all these chapters. MBR in particular has a high OMNR cost. I'd like to see the tables say OMNR instead of O&M. Energy costs and energy usage are also very high for MBR. That's why it needs to be compared and in the tables so we can get a good look at it. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. And that concludes our speakers.
Bill, will you look at the... I gave you a question, and I asked to speak.
I don't see a slip, but go ahead.
No, I'm not. This is the process I would like to speak about. You had my card.
On item four. Item two, that's correct.
In this, will you clarify the process? If I turn a card where I am asking a question... Can I then not speak?
I'm sorry, I don't understand. What are you asking that again?
I turned in a card
yes.
in which I requested to speak, so I should have 2 minutes, and I also put in a question. Do you have that card?
Go ahead, because I have too many cards here. So please go ahead.
If you wish
to speak, go ahead. Otherwise,
this is the process we went through last week. I am talking about the process.
Okay.
This is a general element, and not necessarily due to your fault. The previous meeting was not recorded. It didn't happen. Future members of the Environmental Committee yet to be determined will not have a precise recordation of what transpired in that date. Again, that's not your fault. But... During that process, I asked you if I turn in a question and I turn in, do you then allow me to speak? Or is it a separate element?
I have your slip here, and I interpret it as a question, and I answered the question.
Well, first of all, you didn't answer the question. Second of all, I filled
okay,
the second
you're,
element.
You're running out of time, so please finish your statement.
You did not answer my question. You did not read my question. My question was... Will the CVs or information about the applicants who apply to TAC be posted in the same form that it was done previously?
I believe the answer to that is yes.
Was that what you was that how you read it?
Yes. Am I correct? Yeah. Yes, it will be posted the same. We have to do it that way. It's the way our bylaws are written. So
okay.
It will be posted.
Please, and when a question, can you pay attention to when slips are turned in? Because otherwise you need to inform people that slips with questions on them can then not be used for public speaking. Separate slips?
Separate slips. Yes.
This is a process issue.
Yes. Okay, thank you. Thank you. With that, I'd like to thank everyone for their inputs. You can see we have a lot of work ahead of us now, and we will get to it. And hope to see you all tomorrow at the town hall meeting, and next week at the TAC meeting. Thank you very much. Bye now.